Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. UVM has a new president. In July of this year, Suresh Garamello was installed as UVM's 27th president. There are many challenges facing UVM in the coming years: rising costs, slower student growth than expected, maybe a greater emphasis on science, technology, engineering, and math courses, and a growing debate over social justice issues. Well, how will the new president deal with these and many other important issues? We're going to find out today because he's our guest. Suresh, very great to have you on the program here today.
Thank you very much, Bob. I've been an NPR junkie for decades now, and so it's great to be on your show.
Great to hear that. Prior to being named as UVM's next president in July, you served as the executive vice president for research and partnerships at Purdue University. Briefly tell us, why did you want to come to UVM to be the next president? What was the attraction? What appealed to you about this position?
Thank you, Bob. Really, I think if I had to pick one thing, I would say that it was important to me that UVM is a land-grant university. The fact that Senator Morrill is from this state, he's the person who conceived of the land-grant act that President Lincoln signed, was a big deal to me. UVM certainly has great quality. It's got strong faculty who embrace this teacher-scholar model that I'm sure you're aware of. It's a comprehensive university. It has many aspects that are taught here, and yet it's intimate. It's the right size. So I just saw a lot of potential and a lot of opportunity. I also see UVM as an important economic engine for the state. And so all that on a beautiful campus and setting and in a vibrant college town, it was hard to pass up.
I realize you've only been here for about 2 or 3 months. As you look at some of the challenges facing UVM, what are some of the short-term challenges that you'd like to address at the university?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think that UVM faces challenges that are all that different from what higher education is facing across the nation and perhaps even more broadly. We're in a good place in many ways. So really, my focus, Bob, will be to be centrally focused on student success and the student experience while they're here. And that obviously means we have to offer them the highest quality of education, great connecting with internships and service learning opportunities and such, so that once they graduate from UVM, that they have wonderful opportunities afterwards, and also to keep education affordable and accessible. In your teeing up the conversation, you mentioned that, and I absolutely think it's a critical responsibility of the university. So that's really the North Star. I also would say that I'm very interested in maintaining the upward trajectory of UVM, for us to be known for some research areas and double down on them. And finally, as I said, the land-grant mission is critically important to me, and I think I would like for us to do all we can to be a great asset to this state and for the state to be even prouder of UVM than it already is.
Today, we're looking at the future of the University of Vermont. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. If you have some ideas of the challenges or what you'd like to see the university focus on in the next 5 or 10 years or anything about higher education, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You've mentioned land grant a couple of times, and we got this Facebook post from Jane about that. UVM is a land grant college for Vermont and yet seems focused on Chittenden County. Would Dr. Garamella consider visiting all 14 counties of the state to gain an understanding of the people and issues facing Vermont as a whole?
Way ahead of you, Jane. I've been in the Northeast Kingdom. That was my very first visit. That I promised that during my welcome event to Secretary French, and I followed up. This past week, I was in Bennington, I was in Brattleboro, in Rutland, and then we ended up with a nice reception at the Morgan Horse Farm, which you should all visit if you've not done. So to me, UVM should be and is a great asset to the entire state. And I will visit as often as you want me to. And I'm certainly getting to learn a lot about the state. The colors this time of year don't hurt. But I have already got a schedule for the counties that I've not visited yet, and I'll be doing that this month. So it's extremely important to me that UVM be seen as the great asset to the state that it is.
And do you think now there's a perception that UVM is Chittenden County focused and doesn't reach out to the rest of the state enough?
If there is, we'll fix it. So I can see why people may feel that way. Certainly, there's a very strong population center in the Chittenden area. The fact that, for example, UVM does great research in water and Lake Champlain's right there. So I do think it's important, though, for our listeners to be aware that every college at UVM has some program or the other. It's obviously our College of Agriculture and Life Sciences has a great extension program that is statewide, but every other college has strong programs that are assisting the state. Our graduates are hired across the state. So I think that UVM is today a statewide organization, and we will double down and make sure that more people feel that way about us.
Jane also wrote us that the Newport area has high economic needs and yet is not represented by UVM Extension Service. There was a UVM Extension position with focus on economic development in Newport, but this position was not refilled when a retirement occurred in 2015. Is that something you'll be able to fill in the coming months?
Well, so I probably couldn't give you a specific answer on one of those. As you do know, I've been here for just over 2 months or so. But as I said, I greatly believe in the mission of extension as a way to connect with the state. But again, I think every college, every effort at UVM has much to offer across the state, and we will stay connected. So I can certainly look into the particular case that Jane brings up and understand what's going on.
Let me ask you a question that I get all the time about UVM, or I've certainly gotten it in the last 3 to 6 months. And that's that the UVM trustees are reducing the budget for arts and humanities in favor of the so-called STEM classes, science, technology, engineering, and math. Is that actually happening? And are you at all concerned that there are some arts courses, some liberal arts and humanities courses that have great value to students, and so they should be taking them, and just because they aren't choosing to doesn't mean they shouldn't?
That last part of your question was interesting. You know, what can we make our students do? I won't go there, but
thinking in terms of, you know, you as an educator,
right?
Thinking, you know what, you really ought to take this humanities class. This is important for your overall education.
Right. So let me just address that quickly before I address the broader question. We do have a very strong general education program. They're called Gen Eds, and we have a 40-credit program that is that all of our students have to take. So it certainly has a very strong component of arts and humanities and the liberal arts, for sure, that it is part of the curriculum. So it's not it's actually not something we need to bring about from scratch. That said, right, this question about arts and sciences, I've heard that too. And I've engaged with the college leadership. I've dug in and in fact, the first set of department heads that I met with, even before I arrived, well before I arrived, was with the heads of that college. I'm also very familiar with the higher ed trends across the nation in which enrollment in some of these areas is dropping. And, you know, students are voting with their feet. So we have to understand how to stem that, how to address that. We have, in my previous institution, come up with a good number of innovative approaches, cross-disciplinary approaches, and collaborations and partnerships that allowed the liberal arts program there to be a college to be much more integrated and sort of turn that tide around. So, but to your specific question that you started with, I will say that UVM has given the respect that the College of Arts and Science deserves, which is, you know, we were a private liberal arts school to start with. And so that's a very important part of the university. And I'll say that the financial support from the university to the college has been very strong. $50 million from our comprehensive campaign went to the college. $72 million went towards facilities and support. And just to reel off a couple things, right, we had a $7 million gift for a Center for Creative Arts. The Michelle and Marty Cohen helped us with that. The Royal Tyler Theater, I'm sure you've seen it, was renovated a couple of years ago. We supported the Humanities Center that is very critical and central to some of the things we do. There's central funding for promotion of arts and humanities on campus. And from strategic funds that we could put in any area that we think is most important, we've been putting about $2 million to assist the college. So I would reassure our listeners that the college is very important and a large part of UVM, and we will do all we can to support it, keeping in mind, though, that we may have to sort of update our offerings and also address the trends across higher education in this space.
Today on the program, looking at the future of the University of Vermont, what are your thoughts about that? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Perhaps you have some challenges that you think face UVM, the affordability of college. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You mentioned affordability early on. According to a recent survey by the College Board, Vermont has the highest in-state tuition and costs of any state in the country. It also has the highest out-of-state costs of any university. So for a Vermont student to go to UVM is almost $32,000 a year. And for someone out-of-state, it's almost $57,000 a year. Are you concerned that at $32,000, you're asking someone to spend almost $130,000 over the course of 4 years, that UVM is just going to be out of reach of some Vermont students?
Absolutely. And it's a critical issue, Bob. As you recall, I started with my focus being on the student success and experience, and that affordability and accessibility is a big part of that. So this is very central to what we're all looking at. In my short time here, we've doubled down on that issue. We're working across the colleges and the administrative units to think about addressing this. But you should know, first of all, the numbers you quoted are for total cost of attendance. I would clarify that. It's not the tuition. 44% of Vermont students attend UVM free of tuition. Okay, so I think it's important to recognize that 44% of Vermont students attend. They pay no tuition. And of our support, a good number of – good amount of it goes to loans and grants and scholarships and so on. So we also – I'd point out that, you know, about a third, just over a third of our in-state students graduate with no debt, and a half of our out-of-state students graduate with no loans. And so UVM has been very focused on cost of attendance. And in the last few years, I know my predecessor was very worried about this and kept the tuition increases, modest, I guess. But this is going to be a very important focus for me, Bob, and we will do all we can to not get exactly to that stage where you're saying you don't want to be out of reach of our in-state or out-of-state students. I'll also point out, I'm sure you're aware, that with the same statistics, alongside the statistics you quoted, Vermont also is, in terms of state support, UVM has the smallest amount of state support. We get hardly any support in terms of percentage, you know, about 5% or so of our budget. That leads to the cost being high. I understand Vermont has challenges and, you know, there are issues in enhancing that support. But really what we need to do is to look towards our friends and supporters, raise more resources, double down on research, bring in more money, and keep our costs down. So you have my commitment that affordability and accessibility will drive a lot of our strategic thinking about the university.
You mentioned the low amount of money that UVM gets from the state of Vermont, about 5 or 6% of your overall budget. I think it's around $43 or $44, $45 million, something 42. Like that. 42. Yeah. You know, at the same time, Vermont is trying to support a state college system. It's trying to do two things at once. And some people think it's not doing either one very well, and it ought to concentrate on one and not the other. What are your thoughts about that?
Look, Bob, we'll always take more support if there's a way to get there. And, you know, we'll certainly be engaging with legislators and such to make sure they understand the value proposition of UVM. UVM is an economic engine for the state. I think they did a study some time back. It was over $1.3 billion of sort of a positive impact on the state from UVM being there. You know, I'll also point out that 92% of our graduates are employed. So our placement rate is great, but 50% of the graduates who are employed stay in Vermont. And I will say we're the cause for a very strong net brain gain in the state. Over 30% of out-of-staters that come to UVM stay, right? So the state has multiple challenges with demographics and such, but it also has strong challenges with the workforce. And so we're adding very strongly to the workforce, an innovative component to it. So I think the state gets a very good value from their investment in UVM. That said, you bring up the state colleges. I do think that we need to do all we can to partner with the state colleges, figure out how best to have more articulation programs and such. You note that we already have some strong articulation programs with CCV and so on. So we will do all we can to double down on it. I'll say that the community college-like approach, you know, the associate's degrees and things, serves a different population and a different audience than we do. But we do, of the students in the state that go to college, we admit like over half of them, right? So we're very preferential to Vermont students. 68% or so of Vermonters who apply get in. And remember, I said 44% of Vermont students do not pay any tuition. So I think we're a great value for the state.
Let's start off with Robert, who's calling in Burlington. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi. So I don't have exactly super current numbers, but I remember that your predecessor was paid better than $400,000 a year. That's actually exceeds the salary of the President of the United States. Certainly it exceeds the governor's pay. I just am curious if you are the highest paid employee of the state government of the state of Vermont. And if you know about that or not. The other question also has to do with pay. About a decade ago, I taught as an adjunct, a class in the electrical engineering department. And I was paid approximately $2,000, maybe a little more. That was 2005, so it was more than a decade ago. I imagine now it's maybe $3,000, a little bit more. If an adjunct were to say, somehow we're able to swing three classes a semester, teach two semesters, and maybe teach one class during the summer, they could pull in an entire $21,000 a year working full-time, probably, 60 hours a week. Is that a business model that you want to do by bringing in people that are perhaps experts but aren't tenure track?
Okay, Robert, let's see if we can get an answer for you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, UVM is very proud of the education that it offers. And so this teacher-scholar model that I heard about from a distance and I've experienced here in person tells me that our faculty are deeply proud of the kind of education we offer our students. I've met quite a few of them, and I know they're very committed. I think that UVM also has a high proportion of classes taught by faculty. It's not like, graduate students are teaching many of these classes and such. So we will continue to double down on the quality of education for students and ensure that they're getting exposure to and advising from and mentorship from students from tenure track faculty and people with great experience. So in terms of salary, right, I guess, I could give you all kinds of answers, but I'll simply say that, the board made the decisions about what is a competitive salary. As as you know, university presidents' jobs are quite complex, and so they did a careful analysis of what the median salaries were and what the salary picture was, and I suspect they chose a salary to pay me that compares to the market.
Are you a state employee?
Not really. I guess I'm a UVM employee, but the state does support UVM, right? So I'm very, very proud of the partnership with the state. And as we discussed just earlier, the state support is quite small. So 90% of our revenue comes from out of state, from students from out of state. I think that's worth noting.
Let's talk to Janet, who's calling from South Burlington. Hi, Janet. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I would like to point something out and kind of address the cost of medical school. And what I wanted to point out is that we all know that we have a shortage of doctors in this country, especially in primary care. And what is different between the United States and some most Western countries in Europe is that over there they subsidize the cost of medical school, the government does. And so therefore, their medical students are not saddled with the tremendous amount of student debt. And I just was wondering if our government did subsidize or at least partially subsidize the cost of medical school, wouldn't that be an incentive to, you know, bring more doctors into school?
Very interesting question, Janet. Some medical schools, I'm sure you know much better than I do, I'm going to say NYU, but I could be wrong, don't have tuition anymore at their medical schools. They are tuition free. Is that right? I mean, and because of the enormous amount of debt that some doctors right. take on. And if you want folks to go into primary care, as Janet suggested, it's not the highest paying position in the medical field. And what about that? Is there a way to deal with that?
Yeah. Janet, thank you for your question. There's no doubt, of course, that medical education as well as nursing and such, there's great needs for. And as we all get older, it becomes even more important. You know, interestingly enough, my son, who's a freshman in college, you know, was considering going to medical school. And, you know, we talked quite a bit about the number of years he has to train and go to school, et cetera. So, you know, we've all thought about these efforts. And Bob, to your question, you know, because of these very high costs, some schools have gotten very large gifts and endowments from happy donors. So, you know, $400 million recently was announced for one, for instance. And so, you know, it would be wonderful if there were private entities that cared a lot about this or foundations that offered us support in this space, and we would certainly apply it towards tuition relief. I will say that, first of all, that the College of Medicine at UVM is an amazing asset. I was very, very impressed with the kind of work they do. We have a relatively new dean, Rick Page, who's been doing a fantastic job. He's expanded the number of slots that are there for the MD program. And so I think it's worth pointing out that of the, you know, relatively limited support we get from the state, a quarter of it goes to the College of Medicine to support exactly this space. So I wish I could say that we would want to go tuition-free for medical students, but I'd want to go tuition-free for, you know, all the students. And the way that happens is through private giving. Far be it from me to comment on what the government can do and what the federal government should do. But I do think there's a critical need for primary care physicians. And I know this is of great concern and an area of focus for the College of Medicine.
You mentioned some tuition-free situations. We have some states now, New York State, among others, offering free tuition to their state college system, their public universities. Certainly, Senator Sanders is going around the country in his presidential bid talking about eliminating student debt and also free college tuition. What kind of impact would it have on UVM if public universities and state colleges became tuition free? What kind of pressure would that put on you?
UVM being a public college too, so you'd help us go tuition free is what you're saying, right? It wouldn't put us any pressure.
Well, there'd be an interesting discussion about, I mean, there is, I think, a debate in Vermont. Is UVM a private university or a public university?
I will tell you categorically that we're a land-grant public institution and very proud of it. Thank you very much. To your point, though, about you know, New York State, et cetera, right? There are states that can that are very large states with a very different financial picture from what Vermont has. And, you know, Vermont has multiple challenges on the horizon. I've been reading some very interesting articles. There was one in Campaign for Vermont that had some nice stats, et cetera. So, you know, we have a demographic challenge. The number of students in high school is dropping. Certainly our workforce is dropping, et cetera, and our costs continue to rise. So, UVM is in the same situation that the state is in. I mean, obviously, our medical costs rise and so on. So there's no silver bullet to these things. I, as I said earlier on, I am deeply focused on affordability for students. So student debt is only second to sort of healthcare debt that is loading families. And I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think that continual increases in tuition are the answer, and therefore we're working on it. Again, short time at UVM, but we're trying our best to get our arms around this issue, and we'll do our best to not only rethink our costs, but also to increase our resources to the extent we can from our wonderful alumni and donor community, and also from the federal government and research grants and such.
At Purdue, there was a program called Income Sharing Agreements, right. I think it was called.
Yes.
Is that a possible explain to us how it worked, and is that a possible model for UVM?
Yeah. Income Sharing Agreements, or ISAs, were, you know, they're not a new concept. They've been around for 50 or 60 years. When Purdue went down that path, we were a little surprised at how it hadn't taken off. So it really is one more item on the menu, really, right? It doesn't take away from Pell Grants. It doesn't take away from all the other sources of money available. What it did was to have a fund available that students could seek sort of loans from, if you will, essentially share their future income. And the payback terms, the sort of fail-safe type things, the safety nets, were very strongly thought about. And I think it's, you know, it's a two-year-old experiment. It's going really well. I know that Congress has been discussing it, and Senator Young, I just saw recently, was at a panel from Indiana that has been pushing for some legislation in that space. So, sure, I guess there are many options in this direction that we could pursue, but we really need to think about – we need to take a strategic look at costs, right? It cannot be that, okay, our expenses exceed our income by this much, and therefore let's do a percent cut across everything. I think we need to double down and think about how – you know, what programs we're offering. Are these the most attractive for the students? How can we make them more attractive? How can we make them more current? And I think it will take a pretty strategic look at how to beat this problem. This affordability issue is something that, since you talked about Purdue a couple times, Purdue froze tuition for 8 years in a row, and student debt fell by over 50% in that time. So there are models for doing this. Of course, the state of Indiana supported Purdue more strongly, of course. But so again, no one university's solution applies to other universities or other regions, but we will do our best.
Could you see UVM doing that, freezing tuition for a period of 3, 4, 5 years? Is that realistic?
I don't know yet. I would love to say that the answer is yes, but have me back on the show soon, and I'll have dug into it a little bit more. But it's certainly the direction we would like to go, Bob. We would like to sort of realize that continually increasing tuition isn't going to be a solution, and therefore we'll do all we can to moderate that trend.
Just got a minute left, but I wanted to get an email from Carolyn, because I know a lot of people are talking about this. As a landlord and as a former renter, I would like to know why UVM doesn't require more students to live on campus. Is UVM doing anything to build student housing?
Well, I think My sense is we do a lot. Housing in Burlington is a very big deal, as you know, and there's a lot of challenges. But, you know, we made, 900 beds available in the last 10 years, and we require the first 2 years of students to stay on campus, which is much more than many of our peers. So, of course, we're very cognizant of this. The students have told me that housing costs are a huge issue for them. So, yes, we're looking at it, and we're working with the city and beyond to come up with the best solutions possible.
Suresh Garamella is the new president at the University of Vermont. Thank you very much for coming by today and taking the time to talk to us about the challenges you face at UVM.
Thank you, Bob, and go NPR.